Welcome to Two Titans and a Hunter, a Destiny 2 podcast, a show where we discuss tips, tricks, and tools to help all Guardians succeed and enjoy playing more. What makes us different? Well, we're not streamers or YouTubers. We just have a passion for Destiny and are dedicated to keep Guardians informed and up to date with all the latest Destiny 2 information, news, and opinions. We encourage your questions and feedback. You can contact us either by email at twotitansandahunter@hotmail.com or on Twitter at twotitans_hunter. Now on with the show.
This week, as usual, I am joined by the Titan who would never in a million years sell his pink shader for a billion glimmer or 20 exotic engrams to buy that Galahorn from the spider. Yes, I'm talking about the one and only Parody. And guess what? Somebody's on holiday again, and we didn't want to go doing a podcast, just the two of us again. So we've asked another hunter to fill in this week. And yes, don't tell him. He's probably not going to listen anyway. But we have asked our friend from the Upside Down, Andy13, from our clan. Because let's face it, two Titans and no hunter makes no sense whatsoever. So welcome, Andy. Thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No problem. So let's get on with this week at Bungie for the 14th of March. They start off with the Thorn Quest, and they say owners of the annual pass can begin their journey to acquire this weapon by sifting through the ashes on the EDZ. Earn a weapon fit for a villain and unleash chaos among your foes. So basically, with the Thorn Quest, what we said last week, we said that you visit Banshee to start off your quest. Unfortunately, that's not the case. You have to go and find the start of the quest, and it starts on the EDZ. So if you zone into the area that Devrim K lives at with the church, and if you head towards the back of the church where there are some fallen fighting behind some cars, you'll see an archway that you can go through. And if you follow the route round through into the salt mines and carry on till you get to the broken lift section, there is a transporter that if you activate, it will transport you to the top of the lift shaft where you left Hawthorne at the end of one of the missions. If you follow the hill back up to the top where the other lift brought you to start off with, you'll find there's a big shield that you can't follow. But if you follow the path slightly down towards the left, don't fall off the edge. But if you follow the wall round, and you'll see a little cave that you can jump through. Once you've jumped through that, there is a campsite with all these pillows and sleeping bags and an extinguished fire in the middle. And if you examine the fireplace, you'll find the start of the quest. It'll say examine and you'll find the hunk of metal, and then that will direct you to go and then go and see Banshee at the tower. So that's where you have to start off the quest. And you were saying to me earlier, Andy, that you spent quite some time looking for that even though you knew roughly where it was.
So I saw a guide that told me to like where it was located, and I thought, okay, that's all I need to read of the guide, because that's what I do. I'll read a bit and guess the rest, and I regretted that because I spent about 5 to 10 minutes up there looking for a way to activate this quest, and then I eventually did continue with the guide, and it said just to sift through the fireplace that I kind of circled around multiple times. So yeah, I recommend reading through the whole guide.
Yeah, this is one that I have no idea how. You know, I was thinking, how in the world would you even have found this? And I was watching, it was either My Name is Bife or Myland Games or someone last night, and they pointed out there is a lore card that has, it basically says, you know, sort of plays out the scene and tells you sort of, you know, where this fire is, where this campsite is. I don't know if it, you know, if it fully says, you know, here's where the thorn is buried, but, you know, sort of gives you a hint of where to start. Because I was like, how in the world did people find this to begin with? Of course, I think of that about all the weird out-of-the-way things that people stumble across. So I guess there was, you know, at least some hint in the game about where to start this. But yeah, we go to the internet and the internet tells us.
Yeah, I don't think it was that obvious for general Destiny players. I mean, I did the thing of looking online to see where it roughly starts off, because it didn't show up in your consumables or your inventory or even at the tower. That's what I was like, okay, I thought it started off in the tower. Obviously not. So went and looked for a YouTube video and found roughly where it was, and then, you know, went from there. So going through the Thorn Quest, I've broken it down for you for what you need to get for each part of it. So once you've started the quest off and Banshee has said you've got to go off and do some stuff, one of the parts is collecting the different materials that you used to be able to collect from Destiny 1. So there was Hydronic Essence for Warlocks, There was plasteel plating for Titans, and there was sapphire wire for Hunters. So in each part of the Thorn quest, you have to go off and do various different things. And I believe step 3, it might be, is the Essence, where you can go and do Nightfalls, you can do bounties on Io, or you can kill Warlocks in the Crucible. So breaking it down for you, Nightfalls reward you 15 Hydronic Essence. The bounties will reward you 5 per bounty, and that's you can only pick up 3 per day. Or killing Warlocks in the Crucible will give you 3 Hydronic Essence. And what you want to do is collect 50 in total, and that's for each part. So for Warlocks, for Titans, and Hunters. So the next part is the Steel, which is doing either Heroic Blind Wells. They will give you 10 Plasteel Plating. And with that, you have to do a Blind Well Tier 3 and then overcharge it and get the fourth tier boss to spawn. And if you do that, that will give you 10 Plasteel Plating. Or you can do Bounties on Titan. And again, that is 5 per bounty from Sloan. Or you can kill Titans in the Crucible, and that will give you 3 per kill. And again, you need to collect 50 of those. The Binding, which is either Escalation Protocol Waves or Bounties from Anna Bray on Mars or Hunters in the Crucible. So doing Escalation Protocol, that will give you 5 per wave. Bounties will also give you 5 per bounty. And killing Hunters in the Crucible will give you 3 per Hunter kill.
So I quite enjoyed that first part of the quest, because it made you do activities that you kind of have left behind, like with all the new DLC activities that have come out now. And as a solo player, as you know, Night Demon, Nightfalls aren't exactly something that we do often, unless we just want to get the 100k points, we'll LFG. But in regards to this quest, we kind of rely on our clanmates being online. Well, when I started this quest, there wasn't anyone online, so I actually went and got all the Warlock kills, which did take me a while. And as I completed that, our friendly clan member, Mr. G-Dad, hopped on, and I thought, well, I guess I can do the rest of the quest with him, which was good. But we both did the Nightfalls together, and then we moved on to the Blind Well, which went pretty smoothly because of this quest. Everyone's in Blind Well, so it was great. It was great. Everyone's basically doing all the activities, and then the Escalation Protocol. It was the first time I've ever done Escalation Protocol with a full 9 players in the server, which was amazing. We just breezed through it. It was great. It was great. It was good to see all the players still playing the game, even though it's old activities. They're still there, which is good that this bounty has pretty much brought the players back.
Yeah, and I think even with the Escalation Protocol, if you keep hopping from server to server by zoning into whichever zone, either Anna or back down the back end of it, you'll find at least 3 or 4 people doing it even before this quest came up. So you should get lucky and find a group. If not, if you kick off wave 1, you should be able to do wave 1 and somebody will help join in, or even if there's 2 of you, you should be able to get wave 1 done. And even if you just keep repeating wave 1 over and over again, that will give you the 5 items that you need per wave. You don't have to go all the way up to wave 7 to complete it and then restart. You can do wave 7, pick up the bounties from Anna, and that will give you 15 for the bounties because you're doing kills on Mars in the same place. And then you do 7 Escalation Protocols and it will soon go quite quickly. But yeah, I think that it might be a problem later on if you're kind of trying to do this quest, say in about 6 months' time, it may be less and less people. But in 6 months' time, people's light's going to be a lot higher and you should be able to complete a lot more of these events near enough solo. When I did the Blind Well, there was nobody there, and I kicked it off, somebody joined, and 2 of us got to the bosses. And when I first did it, I was a hunter, so I was doing blade barrages, and the blade barrages automatically take down the ogre's shields on week 3 anyway. And then automatically, because I've got the charge from one of the knights, it regenerated my super extremely quickly because I did the Blade Barrage with the Shards of Galanor on and just kept repeatedly doing that, got the bosses down, and the two of us completed like the wave three. And then as soon as we'd done that, funny enough, other people suddenly zoned into the area, but we'd kind of got to the level four boss, and that was quite quick. Parody, I think you were saying that you'd done some parts of the quest, didn't you?
Yeah, and I've sort of had the same experience you have. Like every time I go into a blind well, you know, whether I'm alone or with a fire team, I'll just go ahead and start off. Like if I'm totally alone, I'll start off maybe a tier two, because it seems like usually by the time, you know, you're at that, at least by that second place you have to capture, you know, someone's zoned in to help, and sort of escalation protocol is the same way. So I don't know if, you know, I don't know if Bungie is saying, hey, there's one going here, let's put more people in your instance, or if they're just, you know, showing up randomly. Don't know, but it seems like it works. Yeah, so I've gotten through the first part where, again, I didn't have anyone to run a Nightfall with, so I murdered a bunch of Warlocks in the Crucible and then got my got that step done. Then I headed to back to Crucible to go murder some of my Titan brethren. Got that done. Also did some blind well, because it's funny, when I was trying to hunt the Warlocks in the Crucible, couldn't really seem to find any Warlocks. Same thing with the Titans. They all seemed to sort of just disappear. It was all Hunters and Warlocks all of a sudden. So I got those parts done. Now I just need to work on my good old Void kills in the Crucible with my hand cannon. So I'm going to grab my either my Akelos or I think I have a Kindled Orchid that's Void, and go in there with everybody else with their Void hand cannons and shoot everybody up. It's been a fest of Void hand cannons this week.
Yeah, and that's the one of the steps, isn't it? With you have to go into the Crucible, and there are several weapons that you can use. There is, like you were saying, the Kindle Orchid from the Forges, the Ikelos hand cannon that you can get from doing Escalation Protocol, or there are a couple of other ones that you can get. I believe Lucky and Buttwhite pointed out that you can get the Thin Line hand cannon, and I'll link a video from where you can farm that in the EDZ. They show you where to go in a Lost Sector to kill the boss and hopefully get a Thin Line hand cannon to drop, and again, that drops as a Void Energy one. You don't necessarily have to use a Void hand cannon if you haven't got one, but it will give you more points towards doing the kills. Also, doing Iron Banner or in competitive will also give you more points. You'll also get more points for repeatedly getting precision headshot kills. So if you get precision headshot kill and then you get another precision headshot kill, especially in competitive, it will bump up your percentage quicker. I believe somebody did work it out, it might have been on Reddit, that if you stay in quick play and you just get the kills, I think it just boils down to kills. You have to get 500 kills in total, which is roughly what the original Thorn quest was in Destiny 1. So if you stay in quick play and just do Void hand cannons or just hand cannons in general or Void kills, it works out to be 500 kills in total. Whereas if you go into the competitive or Iron Banner, it calculates it slightly different. And I believe you were telling me, Andy, that you did it in competitive like I did, because I'd done like 10% in quick play after about 5 games and was getting really frustrated with how slow it was going. So I jumped into competitive and used a Void hand cannon. I believe I used the Ikelos, which was quite good. And I went from spending, I think it was only about two and a half hours in competitive. I mean, I wasn't cared about whether we won or not. I was just caring about the getting the kills. And I've managed to complete that part of the quest quite quickly. I mean, I'm not the best PvP player, but you were saying you had the same kind of experience, didn't you?
Yeah. So I started off in quick play, and I felt like I did a match where I got 20 kills and I left it and I had completed 4%, and that just made me think something's not right. So I moved into competitive and it just felt so much better. At first I was running Malfeasance with a Void Pulse, because then I thought I can get the hand cannon kills, but then I can also get Void kills from a distance. And then I was changing up my loadout quite a bit, but I think I ended it with using the Ace of Spades and a Void hand cannon, and I had the Hunter boots. I can't remember what they're called, but it let me switch between them really quickly.
Lucky pants.
And I think you gain lucky pants, and you get better accuracy. So I was switching between them, so I was able to get a couple hits on with my Ace of Spades, and then I can switch quickly and finish them off with my energy hand cannon. Or if I got a kill with Ace of Spades, I could use the Memento Mori, and then that would get them down a lot quicker. Then I could quickly change to my other hand cannon, and that kind of helped me boost it up a bit.
Cool. The last part of the quest is the Chasm of Screams. It's a strike that is 660 power level, and it's a version of the Savathun Song Strike with modifiers that increase damage received from melee and all elemental damage. Enemies also have more health, and they don't stagger when you shoot them. I need to retcon something that we said last week in the podcast, where we thought that one of the quest steps was to hunt two knights that were free roaming on Titan. That isn't the case. The two knights are actually in the strike. So as long as those knights are killed whilst you're in the strike, it doesn't matter whether you've got the kill or even if you've got a shot on them. As long as they have both been killed by the end of the strike before you take down the Savathun Shrieker, then you'll complete the quest and you'll be rewarded with Thorn at the end. So just make sure those knights are taken down at the end before you take down the Savathun Shrieker.
I was just saying, that was going to lead me to my question. As someone who hasn't run that strike yet, I've seen people say, you know, yeah, make sure you kill the knights before you kill the Shrieker. Since you both have done it, what's something you wish you had known, you know, before you'd run it going into it? You know, me as someone who hasn't done it yet, what's something you wish you had known before you run it that I could maybe take advantage of so I don't, you know, hit my head against the wall and maybe in the same way you guys did? Or was there anything?
Okay, so basically, as you run through the strike, it's pretty much the same. Although earlier on in the strike, I think the knights do spawn earlier on, but they also spawn again in the end boss fight as well. So I am unsure if you have to kill them prior to that last room, but they do also appear.
Sorry, did you have both of them in the last room, Andy, or did you only have one?
Yes.
Okay.
Both in the last room.
So when I did it, I didn't realize that both the knights had spawned earlier on, but we'd killed one of the knights earlier on in the strike when they appeared. And they, you can't miss them. They are huge knights. So you think, oh, these are the ones that we need to take down. So I think everybody focused on those and killed them. And then when we got to the last room with the Savathun, there was only one knight left. So that's something that I didn't realize until you were saying that you'd had both knights in that final room.
Yeah, so both knights spawned as soon as you go into the final phase where Savathun Song is shielded and you need to kill the wizard to bring the orb. So that's when they both spawn in the shielded phase, I'm pretty sure. Oh, actually, I can't remember. It was basically, I think they spawned as soon as you killed the ogres and then moved Savathun Song to the center again, and that's when both knights spawned in.
Okay. So for people that don't know the Savathun Song, that is a shrieker in the center of the map that will spit out void balls to try and kill you. You take it down in increments, so when it's in the middle, you take it down a percentage, it'll move over to the right, take it down slightly more, it'll move back to the center, only for a brief period of damage, then it moves over towards the left-hand side of the map. And once you've damaged that enough, it will close and then it will spawn. I think it's three ogres, isn't it? They'll kind of run down the hill towards you. Once you've killed them, it'll open up again, do a bit more damage, goes back to the center, I believe. And then it will whisk back over to the back end of the map and it'll be shielded by the wizards. And once you've killed the wizard in the middle, there'll be an orb that you can grab. And once you've grabbed that, two other wizards will spawn on the left and right of the Savathun that is still shielded. And there's a kind of three rotating platforms. You can jump onto one of them to slam dunk this orb just in front of Savathun, but take down the two wizards on the left and the right because they will one-shot you in certain circumstances. So make sure that your fire team's focusing on getting those down as well before you dunk.
Yeah, so what my fire team did was as soon as we got rid of the ogres and moved the Shrieker to the center, we ran to where the ogres spawned to the left-hand side up on the hill. There's a small rock where you can kind of hide from the Shrieker's void blasts. And from there, we're able to take down any enemies that were coming towards us. We could hit the knights with rockets or any long-range weapons. And one of us went down, picked up the orb, and came back up just to bring out the two wizards. Then we took them out made sure all the enemies were cleared, made sure we killed the knights, and then once that was done, we got one of the, I think, hunters that we had. He went up, deposited the orb in the back center, and then the Shrieker went back into the middle, and that's when we just DPS with heavy supers, anything that we had, and it worked out well that way.
So you and Andy should start talking about your glorious thorns that you've procured that I'm a little bit closer to now, but still don't actually have.
Well, I used mine quite a bit in the Crucible today, and it is amazing. I've mainly used it on my Hunter, but then I started playing my Warlock today, and when you put that Empowering Rift down, it just does damage. I don't think I'll be using any other primary weapon from now on, and unless they add something else that's magical, like the bad juju, which I highly doubt, but if that comes back, that will be my weapon. But for now, Thorn is the one.
I think I did hear it mentioned that bad juju is one of the weapons of sorrow, isn't it? So it may be one of the ones that does return in the next couple of DLCs or seasons, hopefully. I'd like bad juju as well. It was a good gun.
That gun was amazing. It was just perfect. It was a great pulse. It was quick. It would reload on a precision kill, I think, from memory. And it would give you your super back. What else could you ask for?
I was going to say that, yeah, I used it in Crucible and I found it really nice. I mean, it's got that kind of feel to it. I vaguely remember it from Destiny 1, but, you know, just timing your shots and getting those kills.
The way it fires, it feels like I'm playing Destiny 1. Like they've made it fire exactly the same and it feels good.
Yeah, it does. It feels like a completely different gun, doesn't it? It's from what we've been used to in Destiny 2.
Yeah.
And I took it into Crucible on my Titan as I'd swapped over from doing it on my Hunter. I was completing my daily and I got taken on by a Hunter. And he seemed to be very upset that I had the Thorn. And, you know, he'd bounced all over the place, swapped to his shotgun and then shotgunned me in the back of the head and then teabagged me. So I spent the rest of the match finding him, killing him with the Thorn and then just emoting him just for the pure fun of it because, you know, you don't teabag.
No. See, teabagging isn't part of our clan culture unless we are in a team together and someone teabags one of us, then that gets thrown out the window and we team bag that particular player for the rest of the match.
We love doing that, don't we, Parody?
Absolutely. That's when the objective no longer is clash or control. It's now hunt down that guy, team bag him, win, lose, who cares? We're out for revenge because you don't teabag. You do any emote you want, dance over my corpse, fine, but no teabags.
So, moving on to Bungie Rewards. Bungie say, to celebrate, we're also adding new Bungie Rewards for players to earn as they complete the quests and content from Season of the Drifter. The following rewards will be added to the website on March 19th, 2019. So, there will be a Thorn t-shirt and replica gun available. The steps for this are you have to earn the Thorn in the game. You must have opted in to receive the emails from Bungie Rewards, and you will receive a Bungie reward code, and it will be generated and sent to you or emailed to you, and you can redeem these from March 19th through to June 4th, 2019. There is also Gambit Prime jerseys available. So the requirements for this are to win a Gambit Prime with a single complete set of Notorious armor. So that is the tier 3 set of armor. So you have to have a full set of that for a single roll, so you can't mix and match. It has to be the full set of one set of armor. You can unlock the ability to purchase one jersey for each roll by winning a Gambit Prime match with a different set of Notorious equipped each time. So if you wear a full set of Reaper armor, you'll get a Reaper jersey or a Reaper code, a Collector full set, you'll get a Collector code, and so on and so forth. So there's four different jerseys that you can collect. And again, they'll be available from March 19th through to June 4th, 2019. Moving on to the Allegiance quest. Parody, do you want to take us through that?
Sure. So the Allegiance quest, this was our opportunity to either throw in our lot with the Drifter or stand with the Vanguard. And me being the ever-dedicated Titan to the city, I've thrown in with the Vanguard. I'm sorry. Me being the ever-dedicated Titan to the city, I've thrown in with the Drifter because... The Drifter and I have gotten really close, you know, we defended the six fronts. The city's basically safe. But, you know, the Drifter and I, we've come closer over these last couple of weeks, and I've been playing a whole lot of Gambit and really enjoying myself with it. So I said, you know what, Drifter buddy? Let's see what we have to do. Now, I should say this. I did this before, I believe, like Andy, before we knew what the rewards were going to be. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take a chance. My line of reasoning was this. You know, because, you know, I read the description and said, basically, if you throw him with the Drifter, you won't get the Warlock or lore thing. So I said, you know what? Let's take the Warlock, throw in with the Vanguard. The Warlock can get the Warlock lore. The Titan, he's going to throw in with the Drifter, see where that path takes us. And the Hunter, if he ever gets a chance to throw in with somebody, will, you know, see who has the best loot at this point. So, you know, I've decided to throw in with the Drifter. And once I finish my, you know, Drifter Allegiance quest, which I've barely started, I finally have enough Glimmer after buying too many Ray Banners for the Reckoning to actually purchase the Jerky to start my Drifter quest. But once I finally get there, I'm going to receive a weekly package of a powerful Gambit gear, a Collector Synth, an Invader Synth, a Sentry Synth, and a Reaper Synth, and 100 Infamy Points, which will get me a little bit closer to resetting my rank again to get that nice, lovely Pinnacle Weapon out of there. The Vanguard weekly package, if you decide to, you know, stand with the Vanguard, as I believe Night Demon has, at least initially, you'll receive a powerful Vanguard gear drop every week, a Boon of the Vanguard, 10 Vanguard Tactician Tokens to add to your stash of tokens, and an Enhancement Core. So if you're low on Enhancement Cores, that might be a good way to earn some extra ones for free, basically. And of course, these are all character-based, so if you've got more than one character, you can throw in, you know, you can go all Vanguard, you can go all Drifter, you can throw in with a little of each to get both sides of the pie. So take your pick, throw with whoever you like. I've seen a couple people posting on Twitter and things that, you know, running some of the quest missions, depending who you throw in with, the missions play out a little differently. There was one person who, I'll have to find the link on Twitter, that they had run a mission. They said, you know, when I threw with the Drifter, you know, this hallway was clear. Now that I throw in with the Vanguard playing the same mission again, there's, you know, trip mines all through this hallway. So I'm curious, as I play through, if I notice any, you know, any other small differences between the quest lines.
Yep, it took me so long to get through that hallway with all the trip mines and the bombs underneath, and then I went onto my Warlock and I was with the Drift and I was like, oh, I can just peacefully stroll through here.
So you're saying you didn't just run through that hallway and let them all explode Titan style?
Hunters are squishy, so that I would have been ended with the first trip mine.
No, I took a run at it. I thought, sod it, I'm just going to run straight through it. Titans ho! So in the interest of science for the podcast, I played both sides. So my Titan sided with the Vanguard because he's true, strong to the Vanguard. You know, he always believes in keeping the city safe. My Hunter, he's the turncoat because of what the Vanguard did to his mentor. So he sided with the Drifter.
I love how you've said you've done it for the podcast. Is your wife listening in or something? Is she behind you watching? Or
no, but
did you really do it for the podcast? Or, you know,
this was all done for science and for you lovely people in the audience.
Okay.
So there are a few differences with both sides of the quest, like you were saying. So at one point when you both have to board the Drifter ship to listen to a tape, if you sided with the Vanguard, you'll end up with trip mines everywhere that you have to avoid. And if you sided with the Drifter, there's no trip mines. But what I was going to point out with if you've sided with the Vanguard, and if you follow the steps that we put on last week's podcast, that we detailed what each step is, one that's quite confusing to start off with the Vanguard steps, is where to go in the hangar to send a message to start the quest off. It doesn't give you a specific location. There's not like a little diamond that comes up and says, go here, do this. So when you enter the hangar and you're looking directly at Amanda Holiday, if you walk over towards the right, roughly where Cade was, and just under the stairs on the right, there is a little computer, and that's where you initially start off the quest to investigate or send the message. It will then update the quest and tell you that you then need to see a spy. You then go over towards where the dead Orbit guy is in the hangar, and just around the back there, don't move too far away from him. There's like a computer desk where a couple of people will be standing, and there'll be the spy standing there. And I believe those are the two points that you need to go to when you're told to go to the hangar to do those certain points. It won't actually show you on the hangar with a go-to marker. And I believe later on in the quest, where you have to plant bugs to listen in on the Drifter, if you stand in the doorway, it says plant a bug here. You can plant the bug, wait a couple of seconds, it comes back up, plant another bug there, wait a couple of seconds, plant another bug, and that's it, you're done. You don't have to move around the drifter if you're just being lazy like I was.
That sounds like a bug.
It does sound like a bug, but yeah. But it's quite easy to kind of do that point.
I initially did the Vanguard on my Hunter, and that seemed like it went through quite easily and smoothly. And then I decided to jump on my Warlock and do the Drifter one, and that just dragged on and on and on. And I eventually finished it after a while, and I'm just happy I'll be able to collect my weekly packages now, and I will not be doing the Drifter for my third character because that just took too long.
So again, in the interest of science, I went through, because people are looking for their powerful rewards for this season to see they can get up to 700, on the step that you have to do for the Vanguard and the Drifter, where you have to go to Titan and you do a separate story mission, that will reward you with a powerful reward, either a weapon or an armor piece. The parts in the quest where you have to go and play Gambit and deposit 50 motes, that is bugged at the moment. I didn't realize that until I was just doing the normal Gambit game mode, and I deposited 37 motes in one round, and I was like, this isn't going up. Completed the game, got my daily done, and then when looked on Reddit, and yeah, sure enough, there's a bug with that part of the quest. So if you've got to that part of the quest and you just don't want to venture into Gambit Prime, you're going to have to, because it's the only place that it seems to work at the moment. You have to do depositing 50 motes in Gambit Prime. So if you're unsure about that, just collect like 5-10 motes, then deposit, you know, if you're worried about losing 15 motes at a time. If you're a bit more confident, go in there, just pick up and deposit. You should be able to do it in one match. If not, two matches should be sorted. So there's a bug with that. But you, at the end of that part of the quest, you'll get another powerful reward. The part in the Vanguard steps where you have to kill 25 people in the Crucible, once you've completed that, that will give you another powerful reward.
Also, Parody, I'm not sure if you're aware, but if you want to do the different allegiances on different characters, you're going to have to fork out 50k per character. Just thought I'd let you know, because I have no more Glimmer now.
Oh, yeah, you have to, if you side with the Drifter, it's 50k, isn't it, to buy the Jerky. And on the other side, on the Vanguard side, it's 50k if you want to bribe him. But then he goes and squeals on you anyway to the Drifter. There's no point to kind of bribing him.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I usually sit around like 100,000 Glimmer, because I'm usually, you know, yeah. I mean, I go and buy like every bounty from everybody every day just because I figure I've got Glimmer to burn. And of course, again, I went and bought a bunch of raid banners once I realized, you know, you could put those in the little circle in front of the Reckoning before you jump into it to give everybody full, you know, full ammo and full supers. So I was like, oh, let me throw down, you know, 60,000 Glimmer and raid banners. And it was like, oh, you need to spend 50,000 on this item. I'm like, well, we're going to have to grind. We're going to have to use some of those, what are they, the finest matter weave, or the other one that gives you the shower of Glimmer. So I used a couple of those to try to get my Glimmer back up because I was broke.
But saying that, if you've got enough planetarium materials, you can have a look what the spider's selling that for in the reverse for Glimmer, because you can always buy Glimmer from him. So sometimes he sells it in shards. Sometimes you have to trade the planetary materials. Just check him out and see what he's got on offer. You might be able to just buy from him. So, the Reckoning. Andy, did you want to take us through that part?
Sure thing. Last week, Reckoning Tiers 1 and 2 went live, bringing players to the Plane of the Nine. T3 is now available, opening the chase to fully unlock your Gambit Prime perks. I have not ventured into this, but eventually I will. This activity will have a power level requirement of 680. Players will need to fully upgrade their synthesizer to enter. Modifiers are also active in this playlist, so be ready to mix your arsenal up for the challenge. Matchmaking will continue to be available if you're looking to take on the challenge without a pre-made fire team. Things may be a little trickier though, without strategy or communication, so prepare for some white knuckles as you race the clock to eliminate the darkness.
Cool.
And they're not wrong, because I've jumped into Tier 2 a couple of times, again, just as a solo player. And it's a little frustrating with the matchmaking, because you know, you're in there, and I usually end up, you know, being in the actual, you know, second tier, where once you've cleared the ads in the first area and you're trying to get up the bridge. And, it, you know, so I'll go in, I'll dunk my moat in the bank, and I'll jump in and then join my fire team buddies there, you know, my random blueberry fire team buddies. And, yeah, it's like we're always in some level of disarray. So, like, you know, so I haven't actually gotten through tier two yet. I think I'm about six. I think I'm pushing 670 on my Titan finally. But yeah, I appreciate that there is matchmaking in this. Otherwise, it would just be a thing I would almost never be able to do. But I think the matchmaking, I don't know if they should, you know, I don't know how to do it so you're not penalizing the people who are already there, but it's very hard to sort of jump in as people are already dead and respawning and trying to get a good successful run out of this. So have you guys been able to do, you know, tier two or tier three since it's dropped? And have you had, you know, success with it? Like, I watched GLaAD two-man it with a, you know, Tether Hunter and a Warlock with an Nova Bombs, and they got through it with two people. I can't get through it with four.
I've been grinding through my power very slowly, so I've only done T1 at the moment, but I've seen Night Demon kind of blasting through these tiers like they're nothing.
Well, that's semi-true. When I first started it last week, the beginning of last week when I was leveling up my Hunter, and it was one of the last things that I left to do because I wanted to get my light up as high as possible. And I believe my Hunter, I got him to about 685 before I went into the tier two. And I started off with trying to do tier two, but I'm not sure whether it was the people that it was matching me up with or whether it was the fact that we didn't have the communication. But after about three or four attempts, we couldn't even get past the first or second bubble. So I kind of left that, came back out and did a couple more powerful rewards, went back in with a little bit more light and a little bit more experience from knowing what to do at that point, and I changed my loadout because I think I'd ultimately gone in there as a Tether because those were my highest light items. But then I infused a couple of bits and made myself into a Shards of Galanor because it was a solar burn, and used that over and over again. And we managed to get up to the top of the hill, then got to the Shade of Oryx, which was really confusing because when we were talking about it last week, you'd gone through the fact that it was go through a portal and then you end up in a darkened room like Alakul from Destiny 1. And there'd be two humongous knights with axes that would be trying to kill you. And you'd have to find a hermit, kill him before you could then do damage to the two knights. A bit like the Gambit Prime mode where you'd have a pool of light pop up in the floor and you could only do damage then. We then got transported over to a separate platform where you had a Shade of Oryx. I believe he's like an emissary of Oryx. Killed him, and that went pretty quick with a burn. I think everyone was kind of using solo at that point, and we did it quite quickly. And then I stuck with the same guys, and we just went through it three or four more times to upgrade my synthesizer. And yeah, that was good fun at that point, because I think where we weren't communicating, but we all kind of knew what roles we were doing. I believe I had a solar warlock with a rift. We had a bubble titan. I was with the blades. And I think there was another titan with throwing hammers. And yeah, it just went really good. And we kind of found the chemistry after a while and got going. And saying that, I then played again today to level up my Titan. I went in there at a 690, but also found the problem that I had last week. I was talking to Andy at the time, that went in there and yes, we got to the top of the bridge, but then we weren't doing enough DPS on the boss at the end. I mean, I was going around trying to kill as many adds as possible because they were interfering with what we had, and it took somebody to leave and then another warlock to come in with a rift to kind of then sync the team up, that everybody else then suddenly knew what they were doing, and we got through it after that. So yeah, I mean, it's been enjoyable doing the tier two. I'm excited to now try and see if I can do a tier three. Might not be able to get time before the end of this week, but definitely I'll try next week.
So yeah, so getting back to our, you know, go look for the knights, they'll be waiting in the room for you. You know, someone on Twitter, bumduck_Egypt, you know, asked Cosmo and DMG saying, I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but tier two of the Reckoning is spawning the Lightnings of Oryx instead of the two knights. Is this bugged or intended? And Cosmo responded, this is intended. The Reckoning will alternate between encounters week to week. So it's going to be like doing the Escalation Protocol or the other, you know, team match made events where it's going to be a different boss every week. So it'll be a little bit, you know, I think it adds to the replay value, makes it a little more interesting than just going in and killing the same knights every week. I'll be curious what we have to look forward to for that. And I'm also very happy with the Reckoning that they have made some changes to some of the modifiers in there. Because I remember I tried to run Tier 2 of the Reckoning when it was, I believe, Glass and Brawler at the same time. Let me tell you, those thralls love them some Brawler. we were just completely overwhelmed. And I think that's part of why my attempts at tier two didn't go nearly as well as they could have, because we were just getting destroyed by the Thrall. So they are making some changes to the Reckoning modifiers. Budgie says, an early playtest at the studio, Prism proved to be more challenging than intended in the higher tiers of Reckoning, and we plan to remove it in the first patch proactively. When we launched last week, we collected some fairly positive feedback with Prism and wanted to react quickly and remedy that change. Since Glass seemed more problematic, we wanted to take action there too. Tentatively planned for hotfix 2.2.0.2, we will be replacing Glass with Prism. Tier 3 goes live tomorrow, so we'll continue to monitor feedback and make adjustments. Obviously, Tier 3 is now live, but I'm very happy to see that Glass is no longer going to be in the modifier pool. Prism, while it can be a little annoying, definitely wasn't as bad as Glass, so I'm happy to see that change. So, you know, Xur is back this week. He's got his Invitations of the Nine, formerly called the Xur Bounty. So again, if you're thinking Xur Bounties, now think Invitations of the Nine. So, you know, when Xur, you know, by the time you hear this, Xur will be gone. So I hope you made him this week and, you know, found him there on Titan. So to begin, you'll need to track down Xur. In addition to his exotic inventory, he'll also offer a quest item for you to complete each week for up to 9 weeks. Each week you engage, you'll be invited to learn more about the Nine and unlock lore pages to dive deeper into their story. He did indeed bring us an invitation quest for 9 legendary shards. You can pick up that quest, and it's a pretty short quest. You're going to go collect bits of Taken, bits of Cabal, bits of Fallen. You're going to run the Lake of Shadow Strike. So basically, run your Lake of Shadow Strike. That'll get you all the Taken bits you need. And then I headed over to the Trosslands and to the EDZ and got my Fallen and Cabal kills. I hopped between the Trosslands and between Firebase Hades when the Cabal just didn't feel like coming back to the Trosslands anymore. Like they had heard they were all being killed there. So knock that out, and then once you do finish that, you know, very short quest line, you're going to go into your Gambit menu, and right below the Gambit Reckoning, you're going to see a symbol of the Nine right below the Reckoning. So it's going to say Mystery and Potential, and you're going to hop in there, and I don't want to totally spoil it if you haven't gone in yet. I don't know if you need to complete these before Xur leaves or not, but I'll just say once you jump in, it looks very similar. You're going to be on the hall, you're going to jump through the portal, you're going to go to the Reckoning, and you're going to get wrecked a little bit, because you're going to meet the Emissary of the Nine. She's going to be there, and she's going to tell you a little story about the Drifter. And we'll link in the, you know, if you haven't played it yet, we're going to link some videos from Island Games and from My Name is Bife. You know, there are spoilers. If you can't do it, haven't done it, if you're on vacation this week, it'll show you the cinematic and the story parts you missed. But yeah, she's there, and you're going to have a little talk with her. And I think I got a bit of a scare when I jumped in and saw her waiting for me. Huh? I don't know about you, Andy and Night Demon, but it was a little shocking. Again, not trying to give too much away.
I had to change my underpants after that. It was, quite shocking.
Yeah, it was fun to get. And again, we got a little bit more about, you know, who are the Nine? What are the Nine up to? What do they want? And, you know, what's the trial all about? What's the deal with the Drifter all about? And before we get too far from, you know, go get your invitation to the Nine quest again. It's only 9 legendary shards. It's good fun. It's, you know, the first week of 9 weeks of this, so we'll see where it takes us. But Xur also came back this week, and of course, with good gear that I'll go over briefly, because again, by the time you hear this, Xur will be gone. But basically, he's got the Crimson Hand Cannon for our Hunter friends. He's got the Orpheus Rigs for our Titans. He's got the Worm God Caress. And this week, Warlocks, I hope you got there in time. He brought the Chromatic Fire, the Forsaken Exotic for the Warlocks that he forgot to bring last week. And that's the one that where you're, it's a chess piece for 23 legendary shards, where your kinetic precision kills will cause explosions of the element of your player's subclass. So, could be fun. I just got it to drop right before Xur's shoulder this week, so I haven't had a chance to play with it. But it seems like it could be an interesting one, if you're getting headshots, which I am not.
So, for those of you that don't know who or what Xur is an emissary of the Nine, and he visits, like, the Destiny 2 players on a Friday, and stays till reset. And you have to go and find him somewhere in the world map. He can either be on one of the base planets or in the tower. I believe that he doesn't show up on Mercury, Mars, the Dreaming City, or the Tangled Shore, but he could show up on any of the other planets. And his location is always the same on that specific planet, but it will rotate from week to week. So some weeks you may find him in the tower, some weeks that you may find him in a cave on Io, on Titan, as he was this previous week. Normally about 10 minutes after the reset on the Friday, there'll be a Twitter post or there'll be a YouTube video saying where he is, what he's got. So keep your ear to the ground and you should be able to find him. And like Parody was saying, he brings exotics, and he'll bring one for each class each week and an exotic weapon. He will also bring a fated engram. It will reward you with an exotic that you don't currently have, but it's only working for the base exotics at the moment. So it won't reward you for anything that you're missing for the Forsaken collection, but anything before the Forsaken, if you're missing one of the base exotics, it can drop one of those. So it's always worth trying to visit him, because he can show up with something that's really cool. I mean, when he showed up with the insurmountable Skullfort, the exotic Titan helmet, he came with a bonus to, if you got melee kills, it would give you more super energy. And if you then put that on the one of the shoulder charging Titan subclasses, every time you get a shoulder charge kill, it would give you the normal amount of super energy that it would retain and the extra bonus. So sometimes he brings really good rolls of exotics. And like we were saying, it's something that's in the game to help new players get into the game and get the exotics that aren't dropping for them. So it's worth keeping an eye out for him.
Yeah, and as Dantiba mentioned, it's worth too, if you're looking for, you know, like I've got an Actium War Rig that just has an atrocious roll on. I think, you know, that's the one for Titans that basically lets you shoot auto rifles forever. I've got one that has like no auto rifle perks on it at all. So if you are just looking for a different roll on an exotic, check out what they're selling, because he may have, you know, the same exotic you already have, but the roll might be better now that, you know, random rolls are back. So I was able to pick up, I don't even remember what it was now, something for my Warlock a couple weeks ago that had a better roll than the one I had. So it's worth keeping an eye open, at least to see what the perks are on those exotic pieces.
And another thing to say about the Invitations of the Nine, the final reward that you get after completing that part of the quest for this week anyway is a powerful reward. And at the time, I was currently sitting at 692 for my Titan, and it gave me a 697 primary weapon. So again, it's a plus 5 point gain. So that's another powerful reward that you can get for this week. And going on further, hopefully, it will be quite a powerful reward to get. Gambit Prime, did you want to go through that bit, Parody?
Sure, yeah. So Gambit Prime, you know, now that the Sea of the Drifter is more than a week old, we found some bugs, we squashed some old bugs, made some new bugs. Bungie said, you know, we were tracking down some of the bugs to squash and some quality of life changes to address. We'll be deploying hotfixes and updates along with backend server changes to keep things fresh. Here's a quick list of changes to specific to Gambit, Gambit Prime, and the Reckoning that are currently in flight. And then they made an update to the TWA by 2:20 p.m. on the 14th of March, saying, with the release of this very blog article, Gambit received some updates to matchmaking. Gambit is a team-based activity, and as such, players who are in pre-made fire teams have a communication advantage. To offset that advantage, we've raised the internal skill rating of pre-made fire teams to pull in higher skill enemies to fight against. With this change, even as a solo player, you still have a chance. Plus, your other match-made fire teammates should be higher skilled as well. Solo players of low skill should expect to match other solo players more frequently. Higher skill players will also match teams much more frequently. And also, there has been a small change to the Gambit Prime synths. So shortly after the release of Gambit Prime, players began filling their inventory with Prime Armor synths. Tentatively planned for Hotfix 2.2.0, players will be able to exchange a stack of 5 synths for 100 glimmer with the Drifter. The intention of this isn't to give players a means of acquiring large amounts of glimmer, but strictly to help address inventory issues. Yeah, so by the time you're hearing this, you should be able to dump your big stacks of synths, and your matchmaking should be a little bit better. And again, I've jumped into a couple of Gambit, you know, Gambit Prime matches this week. And again, I did jump into one match. You know, it was a stack of three, or you know, a three-man fire team and another three-man fire team, and then I was a random along with one other random. I've jumped into a couple where there was groups of two, and I've jumped into a few where it's been all 8 of us as solo players. So, I mean, I can't say, you know, I can't say for sure, hey, this patch has definitely worked, but I'm definitely noticing when I jump in solo, there's a lot less big teams, or if there is a team of 2 or 3 or 4, if there are teams of 2 or 3, they're also matched against other teams of 2 or 3. But more often I'm jumping into just, you know, an 8-man free-for-all on 2 teams of 4. So I don't know if you guys have seen any changes to that or played enough to notice anything, but it seems like it's been a good thing so far, you know, in my very limited experience.
Well, I played a bit today and I didn't get stomped. So I guess that means that it could be working.
We'll call that a win.
So one of our main topics this week is gaining light, and it's our tips part 2. So there's a couple of breakdowns on top tier engram drops and prime engram drops and where to get those from. So I'm going to run through where you can get the highest light items and where you can get mid-tier items and low-tier items. So starting with the top tier, Scourge to the Past will give you +6 to +9 light, but that's only valid up until you're about 670 power level. Black Armory, the Ada 1 powerful bounty frames, will give you +6. Again, only available until you hit 670. After that, you know, they're going to be significantly dropped. I believe that Scourge of the Past will drop about +5 light, +4, past 670, and the same with the Black Armory. But again, you have got to have completed the Baguzia Forge for those to work. Otherwise, you're going to be missing out on some of those powerful frames. Prime engrams, again, +5 to +7. They're random. It can be whichever, and there doesn't seem to be a cap on what light you are for those. So they can be quite a high item to get. The mid-tiers, they're drops either at a +3 or a +4. So completing 4 matches of Gambit Prime will get you a +4. The Gambit Prime weekly challenge will also get a +4. For 4 Reckoning wins, that's a +4. And that's guaranteed a helmet drop. So you can kind of figure that into, you know, how you're trying to build your light. So if the helmet is the thing that you need the most, go for that. And if it isn't, and you've got other things that you need to get before your helmet, kind of try and pre-plan it. Reckoning weekly challenge, again, that's a +4 progression to hit 100% on that. So tier 1 grants 10% per completion, tier 2 grants 20%, and a tier 3 will grant you 30%. So you can either do so many tier 1s, so many tier 2s, or only 3 tier 3s and 1 tier 1 with that. So that will get you a +4 reward. And Reckoning, for the first time on a character, you'll gain a weapon, and that'll be a +3 reward. Pinnacle weapons that you can get from Zavala or the Drifter from last season will give you a +3 reward for, so things like the Nightshade from last season or the Fusion Rifle, they'll drop at a +3 for this season. So if you're kind of working towards those from last season, they will still carry over and still give you a highlight item. So low tier drops provide at least 1% in increment for most parts, and sometimes +2 light. So the Black Armory weekly challenge, completing 2 powerful weapon frames, that will give you an armor piece. And now that armor piece is going to be like +1 or +2. But saying that, with Ada, if it's weapons that you need to start off with, think about what you're going to do first. So with Ada, you can pick and choose your weapons. So this week, currently, she has the primary bow, you've got the heavy sword, and you've got the auto rifle in your energy slot. So you can pick and choose. If you need one of those items to be high light, you could go to the forge, grind those out, get that. And that first weapon that you get will be a high light item. So you can plan it around that. So if you need one in that specific slot, and then again for the second slot, you can then plan and then get the armor drop towards the end. So you can always save it, turn it in when you need it to, or do the forge when you need it to do, so get that armor piece drop, and hopefully that will drop at higher light than what you already have. So weekly clan engrams, they can drop up to +2 light, and these are available from Hawthorne when your clan mates have completed Nightfalls, Raids, Crucible, or Gambit matches together. Raid bounties, they can drop +1 or +2, and they're obtained through Hawthorne, where you'll need to complete the raid encounter with the specific mechanics. And everything else is at roughly around a +1 light drop. And I did a kind of a list of, if you say like me at the moment, I'm not touching the raids, I'm not going into the raids, so I'm working off of just being like a solo player. I mean, I'll grab LFGs if I need to, or go through the Xbox app and look at who's looking for a group there, like I did for my Thorn quest. But ultimately, I'm playing it as a solo player to give you an idea of where you can just progress your light. So in counting these, I've got 25 power drops without the raid. So you've got Daily Strike, you've got 3 Weekly Strikes, you've got Nightfall, 100k Nightfall, 3 Story Missions, you've got the Flashpoint, you've got the Flashpoint Heroic Mission, you have the Clan Engram that you can collect just for yourself, 20 bounties from Ikora, the Weekly Gambit Bounty, Spider Bounty, you've got Daily Crucible, Weekly Crucible, Daily Gambit, 3 normal Gambit games, 4 Prime games, 100% on the Reckoning, Reckoning Power Bounty, Dreaming City 8 Bounties. You've got the Ascendant Challenge, is part one of the weeklies that you can get from Petra. Weekly Dreaming City missions. So that's the specific mission, like the monastery mission. They rotate throughout the weeks, but they will all be different. But that will reward you a higher power item. Blindwell, 100% completion, and that is part two of the weeklies that you can get from Petra. And doing both of those bounties will then reward you with a higher light item or drop from Petra as a two-point part. And then Shattered Throne this week, at least, you can get 3 powerful drops. So that's 25 drops that you can potentially get on this week anyway for doing those dailies and weeklies. And as I said, the Shattered Throne pops up every 3 weeks, but there are other things that have crept into the Engram pool, like we were saying earlier, with doing the Invitations of the Nine, doing with your Allegiance quest. You're getting like 3 from each side of the Allegiance quest, definitely. So that's potentially about 30 rewards that you're getting. Plus you're getting Prime Engrams dropping in the meantime as well that'll help boost you. And with that, there's been a lot of people finding that they're getting duplicate drops of the same kind of, they're getting 2 shotguns drop or in the same slot or 2 like helmets to drop.
That's me.
So yeah, some people are finding this. I'm not sure if I've worked it out, whether it's working or not, that every time I go to, before I turn in a bounty or before I get a powerful reward, I make sure that I've refreshed the API. So I go on my Ishtar collective or the Destiny Item Manager and I refresh to make sure that the API is kind of refreshed and is looking at my inventory, you know, to be a bit more in tune with what I've actually done. And the way that I can kind of tell that it knows that it has done it, especially in Destiny Item Manager, because sometimes there's a kind of delay with that. So I look at the experience bar to see where it is before I refresh it and after I've refreshed it, because I've ultimately done some kind of task and it should refresh that XP bar slightly or transfer one item into my inventory and back out again, refresh it. It seems to work better on the Ishtar app on my phone. If I refresh it, it seems to work quite quickly. And once I've done that, I then turn in the bounty or I've finished the mission that I'm on and it seems to drop an item that I need rather than an item that I didn't need. I tried it this morning. I logged in and I did my Gambit daily and it gave me a weapon. So then I thought, okay, I don't need the weapon. I need armor pieces. So I refreshed the API, then went and did my third for the week of the Gambit mission and it dropped me an armor piece. And I thought, okay. Tried it again, refreshed the API, then went and did something else and got another drop. And again, it gave me an armor piece, which is what I need. So I don't know if it's just me think, you know, it's just in my head that this is what that needs to be done. This is, I'm thinking, I'm just trying to give that, you know, that API a push in the right direction. You know, you don't need to necessarily do it on Destiny Item Manager or the Ishtar. You can log into your Bungie account and look at your character and do it that way or obviously the Bungie app. Am I mad, guys? Have you guys tried experimenting with things like this? Or
I would have never have thought to do that, but now that you've mentioned it, I'm going to try that every time.
Yeah, it hadn't occurred to me, but I've definitely seen the issue where, yeah, I'll get 2 identical drops of, yeah, like I've gotten 2 helmets a couple of times. I got 2, I don't remember, it was some kinetic weapon. I got 2 identical kinetic weapons from the same drop, and I was like, really? I mean, I understand there's some randomization in there, but you'd think there'd be at least be something to say, don't give the person 2 of the exact same things. And one was like a little higher light level, one was, you know, drastically lower. So it's like, here's one you can keep and here's one you can trash, as opposed to, you know, 2 things that might be useful to you.
Yeah, you know, you get that double drop once you've done the Petra bounty, the weekly one that she rewards you for doing the 2 different weekly things from the Dreaming City. You know, you kind of get a double drop from that, or even a triple drop sometimes from turning in that bounty at that time. For this week, I've refreshed it and managed to get what I actually needed from it. And I'm not sure if it's just me being crazy or if it does, you know, Destiny just needs that bit of push to go, oh, hang on a minute, you have to make sure that you're looking at the whole thing. I thought it would work when I logged back in from, say, playing yesterday, that it would have automatically updated itself. But it obviously, maybe it didn't this morning when I completed my first Gambit game. And then I needed to refresh the API. I thought, because I just left everything as it was yesterday and hadn't done it through the app, and then tried it, like the two or three times that I've tried it, and it seems to have worked every single time that I've done it. But, you know, it's something for people to try out. If it works, it works. And that's the way it may have been something that we found to help people out. I'm going to move on to the tips and focus section. Yeah. So the new Warlock Exotic Gauntlets, the Getaway Artist, has an enhanced Arc Soul that on consumption of your grenade energy, it will be quite aggressive to tracking guardians and other enemies. And there is a good tip for Gambit Prime. So if you've got one of those Taken mods that we spoke about last week, so again, the Taken mods that you can get from the chests whilst doing the Last Wish raid, there are a couple of videos on YouTube of how you can get into the Last Wish raid and just get a few of the chests solo. So you can have a chance of getting these mods if you're not going into the raid. But hopefully you've got one or two of them if you have done a raid. I haven't done a raid, but I've gone in and done the solo chests and picked up a couple of these mods. And luckily I've got a couple of these Taken mods. So if you've got a Taken mod on one of your armor pieces and you've got these exotic gauntlets, the mod seems to proc as a grenade kill from getting, if the Arc Soul's got that kill for you, it seems to proc as a grenade kill. So if you're going against the Taken in Prime, it hopefully generates you the heavy ammo. Unfortunately, there is a cooldown timer on, you know, you can't constantly just keep killing those Taken, but there seems to be a trick to it. So if you get a kill and the heavy ammo drops, if you then drop your rift and that seems to zero the timer again and you can get another kill. So there's a way of kind of bypassing that timer or the cooldown to getting heavy. And I think a lot of people, if they've got these exotic gauntlets and the Taken mod, are doing this to generate more heavy. So there's a tip for you. The arc buddies are stronger and they will seek out their targets more aggressive. So it's worth, if you do get the gauntlets, it's worth trying them out. One of the things that we wanted to highlight for as a weapon really is the Prospector. So if you haven't got the Prospector, it's an exotic grenade launcher from year one in Destiny 2. And I can't remember what the perks on it are, but it seems to be the go-to weapon against the Riven boss in the Last Wish raid. And I'm going to link a video to Pyro Gaming's where they detail how to DPS Riven, basically. And that's quite an interesting watch. I wanted to make an amendment to our podcast last week, our tips for Gambit Prime, when I was explaining how to DPS the boss in the final phases. I was saying that you have to stand in the pool of light to DPS the primeval boss. Unfortunately, I was wrong. You can run into that pool of light and get a buff that will give you damage. I think it lasts for about 20 seconds. You can then be anywhere else on that map, so you don't have to basically be in that pool with a target on your back waiting for the invader. You can be in other places. As long as you keep going back and grabbing that buff from the pool, you should be all right. Yeah, I think you have about 40 seconds, 50 seconds to DPS the boss in the different stages. So you do have a couple of chances to run through that pool and get that damage buff. I think we briefly explained last week there's a new handicap level for the Nightfalls, but I don't think we fully explained for new players coming into Destiny where you get your modifier card from. So we spoke about Xur earlier in the podcast. Now Xur offers a card that is, I think it's called the Five of Swords. I think it's free. You just have to basically pick it up. If you highlight it and go into it, it will give you various different options of applying a burn to your Nightfall. It will give you three other options that you can also put onto your Nightfall. And there are positive, you can put one positive and two negative, or you can put all three negative, or you can leave, you know, some of them blank. You can play around with this Nightfall card how you want. With that, with the positives that you can put on, you can put that, I think you can put Brawler on, so you can do more damage with melee attacks. You can put Grenadier on, so you do your grenades charge really, really fast. Or you can put heavy drops, so heavy drops more often. When it does drop, it completely rains heavy all across the map. So you can put a plus modifier onto your card, but that will take away a percentage of how your nightfall is scored, because you're going for a score in these nightfalls. You want to score over 100,000. So you can apply a burn of either arc, solar, or void, but you also have the negative modifiers that you can apply that will give your enemies an advantage. So you can have match game, where the enemy shields are highly resistant to all unmatched elemental damage. Momentum, which is regeneration, is disabled when motionless, but faster when sprinting. Blackout, enemy melees are significantly more powerful and radar is disabled. Extinguish, if your fire team falls in the restricted zone, everyone is returned to orbit. Attrition, so regeneration is greatly impaired. Defeating enemies may create wells of light on the floor, and you have to collect those to regenerate your health. Grounded, so damage taken whilst you are airborne is greatly increased. Famine, all ammunition drops are significantly reduced. Iron, which is enemies have more health and are not staggered by damage. So those are the negatives that you can put on your Nightfall Strike. And putting more negatives onto your Nightfall Strike will give you more percentage per kill. So in the Nightfalls, you'll get a percentage of a kill. So if you're at a 1% in your Nightfall and you get a kill, you'll only get 1%. But if you've got these modifiers on, you can stack them up to, I think it's like 9 or 10%. And you can increase your handicap damage and decrease your handicap damage. And at the moment, to over 100 for the multiplier to count, because otherwise you won't be getting enough high score to get the 100,000 Nightfall, and that will reward you with a powerful drop. So go to Xur, wherever he is, in whichever week this is for you. As I said, this week he's on Titan. Pick up your Five of Swords card and have a play around with it, and put the handicap above 100 just to see what multiplier you can get. I think there are a couple of YouTube videos out there. If I do find one, I will link it in the show notes of how best to set it up for you. I mean, there are certain things that you can have on the burns. Although they give you an advantage, they'll also give your enemies an advantage. You kind of have to play around with it. I mean, things like match game will give, you know, will give you a higher percentage than, say, grounded, or extinguished will give you a higher percentage, because, you know, if you all die, you end up going to orbit and having to restart the whole game again. So there are certain things that you can do to get higher percentage, but there's a lot more risk reward kind of situation with it. So it is something that you can play around with. You can also put these Five of Swords card on if you're just doing a normal Nightfall and you want to just bump the difficulty down to the lowest and get your powerful engram. So you can put a burn on, you can put heavy on so it drops more rapidly, and just breeze through it. I mean, there are a lot of solo videos out there, or if you're not confident with doing it solo, have a look on the LFG sites that we've highlighted, the 100.io, Destiny LFG and LFG.net, the dashboard apps as well. So if you're going through the Xbox, you can look under Destiny 2 and it will show you LFG or looking for game. Again, you could go through and just hopefully find somebody like that, or link up with your clan. And another thing to note for the Reckoning Tier 2, if you don't like playing Prime, or you're sick and tired of playing Prime and hopefully trying to get one of the curated rolled weapons to drop, if you play the Reckoning Tier 2 and defeat the boss at the end, you have a chance to have a curated rolled weapon drop for you. This week I got the pulse rifle to drop, and I know a lot of people are farming it for the hand cannon, because there are a certain good couple of rolls on the hand cannon that you can get. So yeah, if you don't like playing that, you have a chance of getting the weapons drop from tier 2. And again, you don't have to deposit motes for that. You can just go in and hopefully find a team that are playing and get that weapon. I wanted to bring up something to discuss. Basically, I've got a concern for the tier 3 armor that's now being available in Prime, and how this is going to impact the new players that are coming into the game mode, and how existing players who are not high enough to get it just yet, you know, it's going to be hard for a tier 1 armor build player who can only get a max of 6 to their armor with the synth going against a fully maxed plus 15 invader. And I know we went over it earlier that they said that they've adjusted the matchmaking, but I don't know how far they're going to adjust the matchmaking, because if you've got 4 individual players with that armor, is it going to then recognize that those 4 players have got that higher tier armor, and they're not going to be paired up against people that are still at kind of the learning part of Prime. It's
that's a good point, because but Bungie haven't really said anything about that, have they? Like that's definitely going to impact other teams and other players that have not been able to get that higher tier armor, which is I guess we will find out, but hopefully they've looked into that, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a deterrent. If it's something that's going to be, you know, throughout the Gambit Prime matches, that you're going to be constantly matched up against these higher, not higher tier players. I mean, they could be the worst players in the world, but they've got a full set of the armor. They've got all those perks available to them, and they're coming across and invading, or they're banking and they're killing, you know, on their side. It's going to dramatically change the landscape for the game. And, you know, casual players aren't going to be able to compete with that. You know, I think it's going to be quite hard for Bungie to select the players that have got those armor pieces, you know, if they're playing solo, or even if they are playing as a team. You know, if say you're going against a full stack team that have got the full set of armor against somebody who's got like just their clan mates that they're just going in to have fun, or they're just getting into the game, or they're just learning the game, that's going to be where the problem lies. And I'm not sure. I think Bungie need to come out now and say, this is what we're putting in place, rather than kind of, oh, hey, everybody's going to get to that stage at some point. Because I've only done it through like trying to figure out for the podcast of, you know, how the Allegiance quest work and how the Thorn quest works, and trying to build up my light at the same time, because I've had to do to get to the point where I can now do a tier 3 reckoning. But if I was just playing the game as normal, I wouldn't have been rushing to get to the higher light that I am now. You know, I'm sitting at 690 for my Hunter. My Titaness is 689, and I think I've got about 15 more engrams that I can get this week. So it's quite hard for just general players, I think, and just not casual players, but I think just players that enjoy the game, that want to come in. I think they're going to find it a struggle if now that these tier 3's opened. If I was that kind of player, I'd have been in there farming all the different sets. I think ultimately you can only get the helmet. I think you can get all four helmets in 1 week, although there'll be random rolls. But those are the things that people would be going for. But you could get all the other armor pieces and be, you know, fully maxed out. And I mean, I'd still be playing solo because of the time zone differences with our clan. It's harder for us to match up. And I think it's going to be quite hard for other people that don't have clans and that don't have, you know, the time invested in the game to go against those other teams. I mean, it's bad enough that, say, you know, you're going in to play at 640. Say that the minimum person is going at 640. They've just done those bounties. They've just got the annual pass. They've just got into playing Gambit Prime. They're going in to just play, or even if they're just playing with their friends and all their friends have got it at that time. You know, this has now been 3 weeks into it. They could then come across those other higher players. They're at 640, and these other players that have been grinding it this week or the last couple of weeks, I mean, there are people that hit 700 within like the first week. You know, they're coming across to invade, even if they haven't got the full set of armor. That's a 50 light difference or 60 light difference coming to invade. You don't stand a chance, and you're going to see that game mode and really be put off, you know, because Bungie can't say that they're not going to match everybody, you know, correctly. I mean, it could be the worst 700 player in the world, but they've just been lucky with drops and things. You know, their skill level could be the worst, but they've got a 60 light difference on invading. So I get where Bungie are coming from, that, you know, they're going to try and tune it, but I can foresee that there's going to be issues with trying to get new players in with the different pools of, what I mean?
Yeah. So I'm like, as you mentioned, I'm probably one of the general players currently, only due to time restraints. And obviously a lot of our friends are playing other games and time zones and all of that. So I'm mainly a solo player as well. But I have not had enough time to grind it out. So I'm currently 661 max at the moment. And if I go into Gambit Prime now, I get annihilated by these high-level invaders. And if I try the Reckoning, I can pretty much only get through Tier 1 going solo. So yeah, I'm currently in that situation where I want to grind out and get my power up, but Bungie have kind of downgraded, as you mentioned earlier with all the power leveling now, all the activities that I have been doing, I've been getting low level drops. So they're kind of forcing everyone to do the new activities, to play Gambit Prime and all of that. But there's no incentive for low level players to get in there a bit later, because they can't, because they're getting smashed by all the other players that have been grinding it out and over. So yeah, it's a bit tough, but hopefully they do something with the matchmaking, or we'll find out eventually, I guess.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, that's definitely something I think is, you know, just like any activity that's got the multiple tiers. I wonder if they're doing any accounting for that. Like I said, so far I haven't really seen anybody running full stacks of anything, or at least, you know, I haven't seen the glow on them as we started, either on my team or the other team. But I know, I think a lot of people, you know, sort of just like that grind for Black Armory, a lot of people aren't at a high enough light level where they're getting much more than that tier one armor. But yeah, now that tier two and three are available here in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be interesting. There's definitely going to be that plateau of people who have played a lot of Gambit and Gambit Prime and Reckoning that have gone through that loop of gaining the armor against those who either just casually pop in, or, you know, who haven't played as much. So yeah, I'm really curious to see if any of their, you know, like skill, you know, like the matchmaking, the changes they mentioned, if any of that skill rating will be based on, you know, what kind of Gambit armor do you have? You know, do you have some tier three Reckoning armor that's just going to absolutely buff your character in this game mode? Yeah, it's definitely a concern. I'm curious to see. I want to say I assume it's something they've thought about, but, you know, I guess we'll find out. I guess we'll see when people are getting, you know, 400 kills as invaders in Gambit against, you know, teams of, you know, either level one or, you know, no tier armor teams. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a problem yet, but I could definitely see it being, because we've had the armor classes in the past for things like the raid, but that's a PvE activity, so who really cares? I mean, you're against the raid, who cares if you can beat the raid quicker? I mean, we're sort of seeing the same thing, and with the people in Gambit now, with the taken armaments from the raid, having just, you know, unlimited heavy. You know, as I've seen it referred to, it coming in with the spammer head, just that hammerhead machine gun, and just wiping your whole team over and over and over, just seemingly with endless supers and endless heavy ammo. So it's definitely, again, you know, it's interesting having a PvE and PvP activity that there's going to, you know, you need to balance those out a little bit. There's going to be some level of you know, unfairness, but so to speak. But I think, yeah, going forward, it's definitely going to be something, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out and see if Bungie addresses it either directly in a TWAB or patch notes, or if you just sort of notice that, hey, all of a sudden I'm not really seeing people with, you know, the higher level armor, or, hey, I'm seeing people with, you know, all, you know, full stacks of teams with the higher level armor all of a sudden every single game and just getting stumped. I was just pulling up the Gambit Prime, you know, when you've got your Reaper maxed out, you know, defeating powerful enemies gains a temporary surge in grenade energy. Your invader invading locks the enemy's bank, standing near the locked bank to drain moats. So just, you know, you could have an incredible invader go in and almost single-handedly both lock down that bank and, you know, go in with, you know, go in as a Titan with a bubble, or, you know, the hunters that want to jump around and hammerhead everybody and just completely lock the other team out. You know, your collector, you know, carrying up to 20 moats and sending the giant blockers to the enemy team. You can just have giant blocker after giant blocker, especially if you're a team that doesn't play as much and maybe don't know, you know, what strategies you need to take down that giant blocker. You're at a standstill. And then your sentry, you know, you and nearby allies are granted maximum resilience, mobility, and recovery while in the well of light. You know, you're going to melt your primeval down. You know, and those are all the top tier perks. You know, the other ones, you know, again, it's just going to be a problem for the other team. So again, I'm curious, you know, I'm sure this is on Bungie's radar. I'm sure people have mentioned it, but I'm sort of curious to see how it plays out as we get closer to 700 as a community, or at least up in, you know, 680, 690 range where people can start doing tier three fairly regularly.
The last discussion point, the Gambit Prime maps. At the moment, they are doing one map each week. I think it's quite a good idea because it gives the average player who's not going to be playing it all week constantly a chance to jump in, you know, sporadically through that week and learn the maps and play it and enjoy it. And I was recently listening to the Destiny Community podcast, and a couple of the guys on there were saying that they hate having the one map a week. But as I said, I find it good to have that one map. You know, I disagree with what they're saying because not everyone can play the map all week. And for people like you and me, if we're just playing regularly and just jumping on, having a bit of fun, it's not something, you know, you don't want to jump into one map and kind of being thrown that, you know, this is a new map. And then the next day you log on, it's another new map. And you're like, oh, hang on a minute. I was just on that map and trying to, you know, find my footing. And like the original Destiny Gambit maps, we all kind of roughly know those now because we've played them constantly. And I think it did help that first week, because by the end of that first week with that map on Mars, I knew roughly, you know, where I could be, where the envoys were coming in, or, you know, where the primevals were going to stand, where the pools were. And I think it helped just being focused on that one for that week. And I understand, you know, YouTubers and streamers don't want to just play that one map over and over and over and over and over again, because it's just repetitive and boring to them. But I think for the average player that is just going to be there to enjoy the game, it's quite a good learning thing. So yeah,
It's like the game isn't made for the YouTubers; it's made for the players. So most players want to learn in their own time, and they can do that if it's the same map for 1 week. They learn that map, and then they know what they're doing. Then the following week, if it's a new map, then that's great. They've got something new to learn. And what Bungie can do is 1 or 2 days a week, possibly even the weekend, can be like a random map day where it cycles through the maps on the one day kind of thing, where it's at least they've got 5 days of one map. Then maybe a weekend they can throw in all the other maps in just to mix it up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll eventually do that. But I think starting off people with this new game mode and these new maps, I think it's been really good and helpful for just the average player to just be able to do what they want for that week and learn and experience that one map, rather than being jarred around with different maps being loaded in. And yes, I mean, they could have, you know, played 2 or 3 games and had the two maps come up and learnt those maps. But I think it's personally, you know, it's good to just have that one map for that 1 week.
I really like having the one map because, again, it you know, it being a new map, it gives you the chance to sort of learn it and sort of figure out where things are, especially it being Gambit. You know, you're going to spend a lot of time on that map for Gambit Prime, even if you don't play Gambit Prime that often. You know, those matches take, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes or longer to get through. So you're going to spend some quality time in these locations. I really like the new maps, and I really like that, you know, they made the decision to say, here's your map. Because when I first read the, you know, the roadmap saying, hey, on this date, we're going to give you this map. And then, you know, on this date, this map comes out. I figured it would be, you know, one map week one and then two maps week two. And then they go like that. But I'm kind of happy they just set it as, you know, this week you get to learn this map. You know, this week you're going to live on Titan. You're going to figure out how these conveyor belts work. Try to figure out some call outs for people. You know, try to figure out when the invader comes, where they're spawning in from, where they're going to take up positions. And honestly, I've just had a ton of fun with the conveyor belts. I love just running around those conveyor belts, you know, either getting to the primeval envoys quicker or trying to get to an invader quicker. I think the one map is fun. And it was sort of interesting too with the, I know they had the bug in regular Gambit where like the primevals either weren't spawning or despawning. I didn't play enough to hit that bug this week, but you know, so I think regular Gambit was down to one or two maps as well. So it was sort of like going to Gambit, learn this map really well. Cause you know, for Gambit, it was a bug, and for Gambit Prime, it was, here's your map of the week. And I really liked it. I think it was a good change.
Yeah. See, I actually haven't even seen this new map just because I was focused on the Thorn quest. And as I said earlier, I don't get to play as often. So when I do play, I focus on one thing until I achieve it. Then I move on to the next activity. So I might try this new map in the next couple of days or so. And I guess I'll try learn that as well. And that's a good thing while it's good to have it for a whole week, because not everyone wants to play that activity all day, every day. They've got their other things that they want to do. So it's good that I can hop on tomorrow or the next day and just jump into it and learn this new map. And then I've been able to play it then.
Yeah. We have got a couple of tips, guides, and videos for you to check out. So I'll list them in the show notes, but there is a Sentry tip guide by Red King Almighty from Reddit. So he goes through, you know, what to do, where to position yourself, and it's quite an interesting read. So I'll link that in the show notes. There is an interesting article on Shack News with the Drifter hidden tape locations in the EDZ. It gives you a kind of written description of where the tapes are, and it also has a little 20-second video. So if you want to see roughly where you need to go to get which lost sector the tape is in, and that is, they're the same lost sectors for both sides For Drifter and for Vanguard. So they're in both the same locations. So once you've done one side, if you're then swapping over to another character, it's quite easy to remember where they are. But again, I will link that from shacknews.com. Another kind of video that I saw this week by Crispy Bacon. He managed to get the Stronghold Titan Exotic Gauntlets to drop. And he's put together he's called it, I can't remember what he's called it now. Okay, so he's called it the Invincible Titan build. And basically, with the gauntlets and a sword, you can indefinitely block. So you can tank so much damage coming into you. And he shows you, if you get your timing down right, and one of the perks on the gauntlets is if you immediately block as an attack comes in, you regenerate health. And I think the block only works from the front facing of the sword. So if you're getting attacked from behind, you will take damage. Or if you're getting splash damage, that would still take effect. But he goes through and shows you how to work out your timing to block with your sword. And he does mention in the video that the Black Talon exotic sword isn't working with this specific build. But then I think Bungie have noted on one of their update pages that they know that the Black Talon sword isn't working with the new Titan exotics, and it is a bug. So that hopefully will be fixed in the future. So that'd be something to look forward to, because I think that'd be quite a deadly combination. The other thing that we wanted to highlight is Lord of Wolves. So if you have the Lord of Wolves exotic shotgun, and this can be obtained via doing the spider bounties. So this is any of the spidey bounties that he has each week that reward you. I think is it with the enhancement cores, Andy?
To be honest, they're the only bounties I don't do that I completely regret, because I do not have this gun and I loved it in Destiny 1 and I need it in Destiny 2. So I'm going to be doing these bounties as often as I can now, but I'm not sure which ones. I think it is.
I think it's the ones that you can get the enhancement cores from and the weekly powerful engram drop. Once you've completed those and turned those in, you do have a chance at the Lord of Wolves to drop. I will link a video by Cheese Forever, who has got a Lord of Wolves full ammo exploit that you can do. And you can do this in Gambit Prime and regular Gambit to max out your energy ammo just before the match starts. So you can go in there with more than what you're assigned to start off with. And there's a video by Euror, literally goes through every strike boss and shows you, you know, this gun with the solar burn is fantastic. I've seen a couple of videos on the Lord of Wolves taking down the blockers in Gambit Prime really quickly without any effort, you know, two shots of that rapid fire. Especially if you kill the Hobgoblin first and get a kill, you'll proc the damage buff on the gun to then take out the Taken Captains, who have a solar shield that, again, you're using a solar weapon, explodes their shield and does extra damage to them. Another shot and they're gone. So it's worth having that gun if you are a sentry and are protecting your bank. So I'll link a couple of those videos for anybody to have a look at. I will also link a Datto tip video, a couple of interesting things that he points out, you know, basic things that, you know, don't be silly in doing this and don't be silly doing that kind of thing. But again, it's a Datto video and it's quite interesting to watch. There is a Mercury Enhancement Core Farming by the Numbers by the Kevinator on Reddit. He's basically done some math on the enhancement core farming for Mercury, and he's explained in the comments and gone into detail of what he's done and how many he's generated over a certain period of time and what he's done to generate those. And I know last week I highlighted a video, I think it was by Pyro Gaming, of how to farm the enhancement cores if you're low in enhancement cores. So he goes over the numbers for that on his Reddit post, and I will link that in the show notes. There are a couple of interesting builds by Azdacross Gaming. He's got one with the Antaeus wards with the sliding for the Titans. He goes over the new and improved Antaeus wards now that the patch has gone live, that the it gives you improved sliding distance, and, you know, shows you how that's working now. That's really interesting to watch. He has a Mark of the Lunar build for a Warlock. So he shows you that with Lunar Faction boots and Rifts and the Thorn, you can literally two-tap Guardians in the Crucible. It's a really nasty build and really interesting to watch. So I'll link that in the show notes. You have the Lion's Handshake, which is by Kami Cakes. Now, I know Kami Cakes is a little bit more higher professional kind of PvP player, but again, he's put a build together that is really interesting. He uses the Lion's Handshake exotic gauntlets for the Hunter and the Fighting Lion. He uses the perk on the Lion's Handshake, the cross counter. So using your arc melee ability or being hit by a melee attack will allow you to follow up with an extremely powerful melee counter punch that will heal you. So he shows you that he punches somebody with his setup. He dodges near the opponent or near another opponent, gets his melee back, and ends up one punching another person, dodging near another person. At one point, I think he was surrounded by about three or four Guardians in the Crucible, and he was just saying he dodged near one, punch one, dodge near the other one, punch the next one, and he took out the whole team. And he's paired it with the Fighting Lion, and it's a really interesting build that I think I'll try once. I mean, I have got the gauntlets to drop. It's one of the only new ones that have dropped for me, and I will try that, and I will link that in the show notes for you guys.
That sounds amazing. I think I need to watch that video.
Check it out because it's really interesting. And that, like I said, I know he's quite a high-end PvP player, but if you can get that down in a couple of situations, even not having the Fighting Lion, if you're just using the guns that you like to use and you've got those gauntlets on and you try it, you know, you may find that it's your new thing, your new best thing in the Crucible. And the last thing that I wanted to highlight is a video by Cool Guy. He has done a video on the Last Perdition pulse rifle, and this is one that you can acquire via Shax for this season in the Crucible. It's one that's come back that they've kind of refreshed, so it can drop with random rolls from packages. It can drop at the end of a Crucible match, and he shows you a roll that is really quite good that he's got. So if you get one of these to drop from the Crucible randomly, have a look at the rolls and have a look at the Cool Guy video, because he goes over, he breaks down, you know, what perks you should be looking out for on this gun, because again, it's one of those sleeper hits that slowly people over time will find it and go, you know, this is a good gun. And I think that's it. Just wanted to say thank you for coming on the show this week and filling in the gap for Respawn while he's off having fun or not having fun, as he puts it. So
thank you for having me. I've enjoyed my time here. I've enjoyed talking with you and Perrit. It's been great. I'll happily do this again whenever Respawn needs a break or he's going on holidays or whatever he needs to do. I'll be here.
Or if me and Perrit need to go on holiday and have a break, it can be two Hunters and a Titan.
Sure thing, easily.
Okay, Parody, it's over to you to close the show.
Thank you for joining us this week. Your Titans have been Parody and Night Demon. Your Hunter this week, while no respawn in real life, is off in real life exploring the wilds, has been Andy13. You can find him on Xbox Live and Twitter at ANDEH13. He's from the good land of Down Under. You can find Night Demon, NITEDEMON, on Xbox Live or Twitter from the good land of our glorious empire in the UK. And I've been Parody, PERoty, on Xbox Live and Twitter here in the good old US of A. You can email the show at 2titansandahunter@hotmail.com. You can hit the show up on Twitter at 2titans_hunter. Hit us up on Facebook. Hit us up on YouTube. Find us on iTunes. Find us on all the places you can get your casts. You can join the Frozen Clan if you want to at join.frozenparty. And that's FR0ZEN.party. If you enjoy sandwiches, come have fun with us. Again, when we run four stacks, we're not a stack team. This has been 2titansandahunter this week. I hope you've enjoyed listening to us. Until next time.
How do you say goodbye in Australia?
See you later, mate.
Yeah. G'day. What? No, that's the wrong one.